Hello, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with the subject of everlasting punishment. We're so glad you could join us today. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, which is in Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America. And we will begin with the morning prayer.
I'm reading from page 62 of Divinity Course in General Collectania. Study the Bible constantly, daily, and dear one, pray. I'll start again. Hello, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, good. There's a lot of noise. Study the Bible constantly, daily, and dear one, pray. Ask the divine love every day to give you all that the Lord's Prayer inculcates. Go alone by yourself 1/2 hour every morning and ask God, good, thy kingdom come. Ask to establish the reign of honesty, peace, and purity in your consciousness, and to overthrow and cast out all that is unlike the Christ love. Ask to forgive those that wrong you, even as God forgives you, and see how this must be for you to reflect God. Ask for deliverance from temptation. Ask for patience, meekness, peace, and so may the grace of God be with you. Mary Baker Eddy.
Wow, that's beautiful. Thank you. We should add that to the list of things to do daily. All right, before we do the watching point, I'd like to mention, Carol told me this week, we have nothing for the newsletter as far as someone who's volunteered their hometown to be featured in our newsletter with pictures and comments. So we would appreciate if somebody who hasn't already been in the newsletter would do that. I don't know. Have we done Plainfield yet?
I was just thinking that would be neat.
Yeah. Okay, well, maybe we'll do Plainfield, Craig.
Oh, she said she won. It happened. Do you want to do it again?
Oh, it did happen?
The first one.
Oh, the first one. Oh, okay. All right, well.
But we can always do more.
Yeah, we could always do more. Well, if any of you feel inspired, we would appreciate that for keep our newsletter going, the neighborhood news. Thank you. All right, Karen, our watching point.
Watch. You pray to infinite love and wisdom to remove from your path those experiences which you need in order to increase your understanding and growth. A child may beg its father to let it leave school and have a holiday, or even to get a job, but the father knows that the child needs the discipline and the education. Whatever we need to teach us to hold our scientific thought against false testimony and mental suggestion, God will provide. Never pray to have removed from your experience that which has come to help you. For the moment you learn the lessons such experiences have come to teach, they will disappear.
Thank you very much. Anybody want to comment on that?
When they cease to occur.
What Mrs. Eddy had, I had that written down too. When these things cease, they will cease to occur.
Yeah.
Anyone?
This watch has been extremely important to me this week, as well as the seventh Bible citation of this week's lesson. Mortal Mind is presenting a trial to me starting on Friday, and both of these treatments are giving me an extreme amount of support and confidence that this trial is just mortal mind and is nothing and has no power but to eliminate itself.
Good, thank you. Yeah, God with you. Lawrence?
Now it makes me think of a thought that came. I don't know if I read it or what, but it said, no error can bind you beyond your own belief in it.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I thought about that. And it really, I see, looking back, I see it's my own belief. As long as I was believing in that error, it continues to test me, to tempt me. And of course, I'm always giving it power, therefore it continues on. And it's the time when it came where I said, no more, like I've heard this week, some people have said that, that's the end of it. I don't believe in it anymore. You have no power. You cannot control me out. Like Jesus said, get thee behind me, Satan. And that was it. So no error can bind you beyond your own belief in it. That's what I heard. And it helped me.
That's wonderful. That's absolutely true.
Yeah, I think this gets to what our attitude towards difficult situations or, you know, problems that confront us. When we, you know, when we're faced with an uncomfortable, difficult, or, you know, you call it a bad situation, do you say, dear God, remove this from me? Or do you say, dear God, what is the blessing that I'm supposed to get from this? What is the lesson that I'm supposed to learn from this? And, you know, the supreme example for me is when Jesus knew he was going to be crucified, he didn't pray to God to have this cup removed from him. He said, only if it's your will, God, thy will be done. He accepted that the worst of all possible circumstances, death, crucifixion, I mean, what could be worse than that? Because he knew there was a blessing and it was God's will that he go through with this thing. So if he was willing to do that, I mean, you know, should we shirk from anything less if there's a lesson to be learned in it, from it?
Thank you. And, you know, this is the real Christian Science healing. You understand this. This is a different magic wand thing going on. This is taking up the cross and following the Christ. Mm-hmm. And being willing to submit to whatever you need to learn to purify the spirit. And yeah, it doesn't sound too fun when you put it in those terms like Gary did. I mean, be willing to be crucified. But truly, if you're willing to walk through the fire, the results are incredible, because what you have learned, you've learned the unreality of error and matter and all kinds of things, hate, and then you've truly experienced true Christian Science healing, which is not actually changing anything, but finding who and what you truly are, and the fire burns off the dross, doesn't it? So
on a smaller scale, it's very humbling. I mean, individually, there's little things that you need to demonstrate. Like, if you need to demonstrate that you're undecaying, but you know, you lose a tooth, it tells you that you're not there yet. And you need to go back and really go to God and find out how to purify your thought and to take smaller actions and have some proofs.
Thank you very much. And that's it. This is taking up the cross in your daily life. proving in what seems more smaller examples, but none are small, right? We learned that in our last Bible study. Every time you overcome any of these false beliefs, you're ultimately overcoming the belief that you live in matter and you're going to die in matter. So this is our daily good to do, divine for thee, an offering pure of love, whereto God leadeth me. And God never asks anything of us that we're not able to do. And it's not God putting us through this fire. It's just, it's the science of it all. It's a complete science. It's amazing how it works. What Florence gave us, no error can bind you beyond your belief in it. I mean, that's such a wonderful, complete thought there. I mean, and it's true. You'll keep experiencing the same thing, deja vu, until you get over your, here it is again. I know this. Until you really, really get over it. It's like that wonderful little, I don't know what you'd call it, a joke or whatever about the, I've told it many times, the man being chased by the devil. And he's running and running and running. He's so afraid. Finally, the devil catches up to him. And he says, what are you going to do with me? What are you going to do with me? And the devil says, I don't know. This is your dream. So.
And it's kind of like back to the math analogy, right? If you start out with the wrong calculation, you're going to end up with the wrong answer. And yet, at the same time, that wrong calculation, 2 and 2 is 5, never had any power, never had any reality. It was your perception of it that did that. And so when we rejoice in tribulation, it's because we know the outcome is going to be that we have learned something, which is what it's all about, right?
Yes, thank you. That's very true. Thank you very much. Yes. It's always, we're just under a misconception, and we're going to wake up to the truth. And Mrs. Eddy says how long that takes depends on how stubbornly you hold on to it. Mrs. Evans used to say her mother would always say that you get in life what you need. And I guess it's sort of what we've been talking about, the things that come to you or things you need in order to figure out the math problem. Tell you are the victor, and always the victor, never the vanquished.
And which is why Mrs. Eddy wrote, better the pains of sense than the false pleasures, which, you know, the pains of sense push you to seek God, to know God better. Therefore, to know yourself better.
Yeah. And, you know, people think, oh, look at these people. They're having, oh, look, they're having such a great time. They're not Christian Scientists. They don't have any problems. That is such a wrong thought. For one thing, you do not know how come you know all about these people? You have no idea about anything. And to covet them or to think, oh, they have it easy and they're not Christian Scientists. How is that? That is such a wrong thought. It's a despicable thought. And if it ever comes to you, you should despise it and get it the heck out of your thinking. There's so many things wrong with that. First of all, disobeying the commandment, thou shalt not covet. And then judging people. I mean, maybe you're judging them you're still judging that you think they're doing so well and you really don't know. I mean, there's so many things. Go ahead.
So one of the lowest parts of my life where things were just about to fall apart for me, when it finally happened and I was talking to my dad, he said, I thought everything was going so well. He's like, I stopped praying for you a long time ago.
There you go. No, that's exactly true. You know, I remember my son, he thought this family and, you know, when he was in high school, this kid and his family, it was such a wonderful family, such a nice home, such a great family. And in a couple of weeks, he found out that the parents were divorcing. I mean, you just don't know. And it, besides that, it's none of our business. And all we do need to know is to know everyone is God's child and they're getting whatever lessons they need in life and to know the truth about them.
So. And the whole point here is you don't judge outward appearance, because people will put on a good face. And then especially people who are extremely troubled, mentally troubled, will put on a good face just to hide their trouble. How can anybody be at peace with themselves unless they have a good relationship with God?
Well, and that is the bottom line. And that you don't know too. Who knows? Maybe they do. Maybe they've taken everything from God all their life, and that's why their life seems to be, you know, pretty good. I mean, we just don't know. It's none of our business. So I just say that because every once in a while I get that question.
I just wanted to follow up what I said with the fact that after everything fell apart, it turned into one of the best things that ever happened to me.
There we are, you see, because it led us.
And I wouldn't be here now if that didn't happen.
That's it. And that's the thing. All things work together for good to them that love God, to them that are called according to purpose. So whatever you're going through, you make what they say, you make lemonade out of a lemon. And Jeremy, through all that he went through, he's always faithful, he always did the best he could, and God saw him through. So, all right, we have three submissions this week to me. Is Misha Ila here?
Misha Ila is here.
Okay, Misha Ila, you want to share what you wrote?
Yes. So I was deeply moved this week by the story of Joseph and how he deals with his brothers who have done him wrong. And the brothers were fearful how he will deal with them. Joseph says, "Fear not, for am I in the place of God?" Mm-hmm. With this, I feel he says, "I am not God. I am not in the place to judge." Nevertheless, he acknowledges that his brothers have done evil. Then he says, "But as for you, ye thought evil against me." For me, that sounds like this is an impersonal declaration of the wrong done without condemnation. He neither judges nor does he belittle what they did by saying, "Oh, it was nothing," or "it wasn't that bad." No, Joseph acknowledges the claim of error, as it is often said here, by saying, "Ye thought evil against me." But he's not at all personally offended. Instead, he says, "But God meant it unto good." In the sense that all things, like it just was said, all things work together, work for good to them that love God. We know from the story of Joseph that he never got upset about his seemingly dire circumstances, but always trusted in God and loved his God. And his situation always improved, and he could be of use for God. For me, that was such a wonderful lesson, to not be angry, upset, or annoyed about people or things or circumstances. I want to be like Joseph, always seeing only God good in all and nothing else. And at the same time, not allowing error to linger, but addressing it impersonally and show love and mercy to all mankind. In theory, I get this, but in practice, I struggle. I struggle every day. But at least I start to see my struggle to be always good. And for me, that goes with citation 7 in Science and Health. Mrs. Eddy says there is no hypocrisy in science. Always right. Its divine principle never repents, but maintains the claim of truth by quenching error. And if man understood their real spiritual source to be all blessedness, they would struggle for recourse to the spiritual and be at peace. I feel my struggle for recourse has started, and I'm very grateful for it. And I'm very grateful also for all what was said before. It's very humbling.
Thank you, Michaela. That's very beautiful. Yeah, it's a good prayer. I could certainly be more like Joseph. He was overcoming and not getting angry, yes, but not ignoring the error. Knowing he wasn't God, keeping humble. That's quite a wonderful example. Thank you for sharing that.
I looked up the word quenching from that statement she just read. And it says to put out, reduce to silence, bring to end, demolish, destroy. I thought that was.
Thank you. Yes, that passage from Science and Health is a wonderful one, that number 7. No hypocrisy in science, always right. Its divine principle never repents, but maintains the claim of truth by, yes, wiping out that error. It's a rock.
I love it. You cannot mock it by human will.
Yeah, right. Thank you.
Well, and one of the lessons of the story is it quenches error. It doesn't quench.
Yes. Thank
you. But it quenches the error.
Yes.
And as a result of that, it heals the people. Yep. You're right, Michaela. We should all be more like Joseph.
Yeah.
Okay, Nancy.
Oh, I wrote about citation 7.
Can you all hear her?
I wrote about citation 7 in the Bible, 1 Corinthians. No temptation has overtaken you except as is common to man. And I found commentary verse by verse that temptations are the common experience of every believer. No one is exempt. Temptations are not peculiar to us, for there is no temptation that is unique. So no one can hide behind the argument that his sin is unique, and so he can be excused. But God is faithful, for all temptations are under God's control and personal involvement. Spiritual failure is avoidable. Whatever our trouble, whatever our trial, he will see us through because of his immutable character. He will not allow you to be tempted upon what you are able, for God personally intervenes by his providence, and he will not allow us to be tempted beyond what we can handle. God will stretch us spiritually, but not beyond our ability to bear it. For temptation is an opportunity to grow in our faith. But with the temptation, we'll also make the way of escape. In God's providence, he personally makes a way of escape from temptation. For every temptation allowed by God, he provides an answer. We draw enough grace from each situation. We are not alone in our temptation and can draw on God to deliver us. That we may be able to bear it. God provides the way. There is always divine provision. God designs every temptation for blessing and for spiritual growth. God is faithful in testing and temptation. The great issue in it all is the character of God. He is immutable and faithful to his promises. And God loves the believer who is out of fellowship as much as the believer in fellowship, for he is faithful to both. And I love that. We can't think, oh, why me? Poor me. Why is this happening to me? Not unique. And it's our chance and our opportunity to grow closer to God.
Yes.
Florence said a long time ago, what makes you so special?
Right. She's so special. Yeah. These some of these contributions, and that's true in the Bible study too, they come from sources that are not Christian Science. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it makes it seem like God is a person up in the sky, but he's, of course, we know that's not true. He speaks to us. He is our consciousness. And I just wanted to make that distinction. But yes, and temptation, you know, and one of the things to handle daily, and I love this on our website from Watch's Prayers and Arguments, make supplication to God daily that you may be delivered from all beliefs of sin or of sickness. And after doing this, then turn to and demand of yourself to realize their unreality and recognize your power over that temptation to yield to any such an illusion. That idea of temptation is such a big one, because you're fine unless you yield to the temptation. It comes always as a suggestion. So catch it when it's tempting you to believe you've got this sickness, or believe you're poor, believe you're poor, pitiful pearl, or whatever it's trying to get you to believe. And smash it, quench it, get rid of it.
Yes, and I was thinking when we smash that temptation, this week's lesson becomes everlasting arms of love instead of everlasting punishment. I've been thinking of it that way all week, and it's been really lovely.
Yeah, Mrs. Evans used to always call this lesson everlasting love. Otherwise it sounds rough, but yeah, she liked to call it everlasting love. And there is only everlasting love. If seem to be having everlasting punishment, we're doing it to ourselves by refusing to obey God's commands. And how gentle are God's commands?
Yeah, and you know, as scientists, we learn that God doesn't tempt us. God has nothing to do with the temptation. He doesn't even know temptation, which is why in Mrs. Eddy's interpretation of the Lord's Prayer, God does not lead us into temptation.
Yeah.
Well, I think also if we are always having the allness of God, that all power belongs to Him in front of us, then you know, it says in Science and Health that the error's chief blow is to see its nothingness. So I think to have God has all the power, all the presence right here now. So you are nothing. To see that is the chief blow to error, really, to see the nothingness of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not fighting against something. Mm-hmm. We're not. And in seeing the nothingness of it, we are under the obedience of the first commandment, mm-hmm. which is paramount. If you see it as something that you're fighting, you've made a reality out of it, and the you've set the battle in array, as it said. You've got to know its nothingness. Stare it in the face. Yes, the hell you say. You're not going to be.
One article that was on, I don't know whether it came in the daily calendar or whether it was on the carousel, but it was a very, only two paragraphs, Malpractice Unreal by Herbert Eustace. And it just came to me. It was right here lying in front of me. What it says is what helped me so much is it said it should be evident to the nearest novice in Christian Science that there could be no suppositional opposite to what he does not know. Thus it is his knowing alone that he is called upon to defend. Evil does not operate as something over there outside of one's own mentality. It always operates as the negative of what one knows. And that helped me so much I already have the answer. I already know it because I have the mind of God, but it's only arguing against something that I already know. And that really, sometimes I've always thought, God, I'm ignorant. I don't know what to do. I don't understand. And it's telling you right here, yes, you do know the truth. That's what's being told to you, that you don't know it, but you have the answer right there with you. And that really helped me.
Good. Thank you. Yes. It says a lot of such wonderful things and in different ways. Sometimes if you don't get it the way it's stated in one way, you'll get it in another way. Just like cowabunga, I get that now. That's good. However we can understand it.
Yeah, there's a strange phenomenon that we need to understand that's sometimes elusive. You know, Mrs. Eddy says that error or the lie nips at the heel of truth. But the phenomenon is that for every truth, there seems to be an opposite lie. And if you don't fill your consciousness with the truth and stand firmly with the truth, the lie will actually try to creep in. And that's why we watch. And that's why if we don't watch, the lie, which tries to be very suggestive, tries to be very appealing, will slip in to our consciousness. And that's what we have to watch against. So it doesn't have any power to do anything to us. Its only power is suggestion. That's why when you stomp it with your heel, with the truth has all the power, but you have to use it. You have to recognize that there is a lie trying to sneak in and smash it. If we don't smash it, then it's got us.
We were always told here, too, it would try to come to you tailor-made, something that you will accept. For various reasons, you know, maybe you saw it in your family, or you've accepted certain things. So it comes to you tailor-made that you will accept it. Somehow it makes sense to you. And that's where you have to be sharp and on the ball and no, this did God say this? And there's so many little suggestions, like what was just said by Karen. I can't understand this. Well, who says you can't understand this? Doesn't say you can't understand this. That's part of the ploy to get you, oh, I can't understand this, I can't grow. And then pretty soon you've got Era and all his friends. So be quick to cast out those negative thoughts that aren't of God. Because yes. They build. Go ahead.
You both said before reminds me of that great quote. The serpent typifies evil, and the snake will lie right beside a person who is awake and never touch him or her. But as soon as we fall asleep, we will attack. That's Adam H. Dickey.
Thank you. Good, thank you. And all that we are talking about today keeps us out of a sort of a punishment or hell that is of our own making. So thank you.
Ingrid. I heard about anger, and because you mentioned anger and punishment, someone made a definition as anger is an emotional punishment to oneself or to others. I thought that was interesting.
Yes, emotional, thank you.
Emotional punishment to oneself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. All right, Chardell.
Oh, I picked number 5, Second Chronicles, because I think it's so true. And the Bible is so wonderful, as is Science and Health. And all the answers are there. This is so appropriate for us. For the Lord your God is gracious and merciful and will not turn away his face from you if you return unto him. I looked it up a little bit because I wanted to know who wrote it. It's Ezra. It says Ezra and Nehemiah. And they were both reformers and builders and restorers of the laws, the Jewish laws for the people, to help the people. And then I read this, that the chronicler wrote his books to promote spiritual and social renewal. He presented an interpretation of Israel's past, drawing mainly on the books of Samuel and Kings, which I thought was very interesting. he showed the nation's unfaithfulness to God, as we have done, and led to disaster, but also how its faithful people and kings and all the people had experienced God's blessings always right there. So I thought, we can do this too. United States of America and all the world.
And all the world. Yes, we can. Yeah, this lesson, the Bible was all about forgiveness, and the second part was all about, you're not forgiven until there's the repentance and that you change your ways. So, and everyone is certainly capable of doing that. And as our watch on Thursday, that Clarence Chadwick quote about the failing of systems, if the systems are godless, they will fail.
And they should fail.
They should, and we should
rejoice that they fail.
Yes. Stand back, stand out of the way, because they're going to collapse. We see it in government, education, materia medica, Hollywood, you name it, that they're going to fail, because where they didn't have God in it, there's no substance to it. So, and some of that might be painful, but if you're keeping crime in check and doing what you should be, then God preserves the faithful, right? And in the lesson this week, it mentions preserve a couple of times anyway, and I always love to look up that definition, because to keep or save from injury or destruction, to defend from evil, to uphold, to sustain, to save from decay, as Craig was saying, to keep from corruption, and to preserve from the violent man. That's a quote from Psalm 140. But God, I will preserve thee. God promises this. So we can know, as we do this work faithfully, as we stand unmoved and know this is the nothingness of error, error destroying itself, not seeing it as some big reality, but only error destroying itself, then we are in a wonderful place of safety, which we're going to talk about in a minute. Jeremy, you want to read the golden text?
Isaiah. Seek ye the Lord while he may be found. Call ye upon him while he is near.
Thank you. Now we have some really beautiful articles from Carey. And one, I just love this, Irving Tomlinson taking that quote and saying that, I have been helped of late in thinking of the nearness of God. And then he quotes that. And then the Christ was foretold as Emmanuel, God with us. And through the help given us in Christian Science, it is our blessed privilege at this time to prove that God is with us. God is indeed near us when we truly know him and reflect his love. And then he says, when our eyes are open, we find God near in the bending heavens, in the opening flower, in the love light that shines forth from the child's eyes. Let us train ourselves to know that God is near when two hearts beat kindly in sympathy, when a true word is spoken to an open ear, when a loving deed or kindness is welcomed by a grateful heart, when selfishness gives way to sacrifice and pride falls before humility, when resentment is banished and brotherly love floods the heart. And then he quotes, then, brother man, fold to thy heart thy brother, for where love dwells, the peace of God is there. To worship rightly is to love each other, each smile a hymn, each kindly deed a prayer. And that's from our hymnal. But you must understand, a lot of what we see today are malicious. It's malicious elements that are trying to come in and divide us. Many of the so-called students protesting all this, they're not even students. These are activists. And I will say, I saw this in Plainfield a million years ago. I saw it happening. They come in to divide. And if they can get us to divide and hate each other and carry on, they will have accomplished their purpose. But if we remain unmoved by any of this, and knowing that God is always in control of his people, and we love all our brethren in Christ, right? We do. we will get through this unscathed. It's an attempt to what did Abraham Lincoln say? Was it Abraham Lincoln? Divide and maybe it's the Bible. For divide and conquer, right? You divide and conquer. Don't let these pictures, whatever they are, all over in government, in, as I just said, education, everywhere you go, they're trying to hit these main things to divide us, to get us hateful toward each other. And the news certainly contributes to it. Don't go there. If it doesn't measure up to the Sermon on the Mount, then we don't have to listen.
Yeah, don't just work on knowing your own oneness with God. You have to know everyone's oneness.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And then this was a beautiful one about preparation and protection. And it's saying just that, what must be done in order to feel safe at all times? The answer is that we must learn to know God as taught by Christ Jesus in Christian Science. And Mrs. Eddy has said, the God principle is omnipresent and omnipotent. God is everywhere, and nothing apart from him is present or has power. That's the treatment for these situations, because that's the truth. To realize this with true spiritual discernment is to feel assured at all times of certain protection. God, divine mind, divine principle, as we've talked about, knows no evil, and he is all. Therefore, to know in times of seeming danger that the law of divine principle is in operation and ever available is a sure haven from the storm. So, again, and I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know of any other religion, and we know Christian Science isn't even a religion, it's a way of life, the laws and rules of the universe, that teaches this unreality of the error. If you think error is real and you have to protect yourself from it, then you've got a problem, right?
And then from the beginning, it's got you. Because that's not protection.
So I think anything that would try to teach that wouldn't have rebukes going with it.
Right.
It would just be too soft. So.
And it says, and one of the main ways to stay in this consciousness, in the Father's house, in the Christ consciousness, is your gratitude. Seek the Lord while he may be found, call upon him while he is near, is something for the Christian to ponder well. We should not wait for the so-called hour of danger in which to call upon divine principle for succor, but should so prepare the thought when free from fear and all seems bright and joyous by filling consciousness with grateful acknowledgement of Spirit's all power, that we may be ready for the possible test should it come. May we never forget to thank God for his tender care and his great love, to rejoice in his ever-presence, to be glad that his available law is operating now, and again, thank him. Because this is what we're talking about. Going to sleep when things are well. You can't. You've got to, when things seem good in your life, to thank God for it, but then also know the truth for your brother man. Not just be self-satisfied, as Jeremy just said.
Always be saying, thank you, God.
Yes, always be saying. It's
very automatic right there.
And Lil does a lot of that. And then in the watch last night, it addresses it from Watch's Prayers and Arguments. May the allness of God love and the nothingness of aught else serve to cover the question of your protection. And the all good and the powerlessness and non-existence of evil will be the reality of your thought. That's a tremendous statement.
Yeah, what's real to me?
What is real? What is the reality of your thought? Ask yourself, what do you believe to be real? That's why you have to keep going back to the truth, going back to the first commandment. Adam, where art thou? And then she said a couple of other really good ones, too, about, Jesus speaking to the woman who had committed adultery and how there was absolutely no condemnation there at all. Carrie sending two articles. One was called The Sin and Sinner, and the other was Two Convictions. But The Sin and Sinner, it brings out, the scribes and Pharisees were asleep in error. Now, this wasn't in the lesson, but it's when Jesus rebukes the scribes and Pharisees. Remember that? Scathingly. Mm-hmm. Satisfied to remain as they were, Jesus loved them and would save them. He loved not the sin of hypocrisy nor the dream of materiality, but he loved the individual. They did not know the terribleness of their condition. They did not realize how far they were away from the truth. Jesus had for them something better, but they must see their need of it before they would accept it. Hence, he must first cause them to see they were in error. For this, he said, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees and hypocrites!" He showed them the errors they indulged in and the terrible consequences that must inevitably follow. Then he adds, "Ye serpents, ye generations of vipers, how can ye escape the damnation of hell?" Matthew 13. Now, were these the words of love? Yes. And given in the spirit of love that knows no hate, they were truth's denunciation of error. While Jesus possessed undying love for the sinner, he was unrelenting towards sin. The purity of his thought made his rebuke all the more terrible. But the design of love is to reform the sinner, signs of health. As a drowning man suffers when being brought back to life, so the sinner suffers under truth's denunciation of error. The suffering of mortal thought when rebuked by love serves to destroy sin, but saves the individual, revealing him as the image and likeness of God. This is so important because this is a huge point that Christian Scientists don't seem to understand. This "I must be loving" thing. You kind of denounce the error. You love the person, but the error must be denounced. And if they're asleep and full of self-righteousness, the stronger the rebuke has to be to wake them up out of that condition. Now then, in comparison, how different seemed the manifestation of love to the woman. No need of rebuke there. She had been awakened to a keen sense of her condition and desired to be saved from it. Is that not true? Yes. Jesus knew the desire of her heart, and she was willing and ready to receive the blessings of truth. Hence he said to her, "Neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more." Did he manifest the same love as when he spake to the scribes and Pharisees? He did. But it does not appear the same to mortal sense. We see in these two instances the greatness and grandeur of Jesus' character. Unrelenting, inexorable, and terrible towards sin. All tenderness, compassion toward the sinner. And it goes on. This whole article is so wonderful. Should be on our website. And it's from an 1890 issue of the journal. Mrs. Eddy was here. And then one other thing before we end was that idea of the 10,000 talents. And in looking up the 10,000 talents, it's worth $2.5 million, I guess. That was the debt. The debt we owe to God. It was just showing how much. And then Mrs. Eddy, I'll quote these two beautiful quotes, both from miscellaneous writings. "While no offering can liquidate one's debt of gratitude to God, the fervent heart and the willing hand are not unknown nor unrewarded by him." And then on 382, miscellaneous writings. "No works on the subject of Christian Science existed prior to my discovery of this science. Before the publication of my first work on this doctrine, a few manuscripts of mine were in circulation. The discovery and founding of Christian Science has cost more than 30 years of unremitting toil and unrest. But comparing those with the joy of knowing that the sinner and the sick are helped thereby, that time and eternity bear witness to this gift of God to the race. I am the debtor. That is Mrs. Eddy. When people ask, we do love her and respect her. We do not worship her. Someone was trying to say this week to me, we love and respect her. That's why, for all that she gave. All that she gave. And anyone who truly studies her life understands this. So, this story of the 10,000 talents indicates the immensity of debt which man owes to God. And that's why we're all here doing what we're doing, joyously and happily, right?
Yes.
Because we are so grateful for what God has done to us. So we're going to end now.
We're going to end with the article entitled The Quality of Mercy by William P. McKenzie from an 1899 issue. I guess the and he writes, become compassionate. Become compassionate, said Jesus, as your Father in heaven is compassionate. He shall have judgment without mercy who has shown no mercy, declared James. In Christian Science, we are set free completely from one thing, that is, judging others. We are set free to love our brother. If there be a wrong, it is God's to avenge and vindicate the right. Man's way is to take revenge and make the wrong greater. Resentment seems inseparable from human judgment, and such judgment implies the superiority of the judge above the culprit, such as was assumed by Caiaphas, who rent his clothes in pride of his sanctity and separateness from the Christ, whom he called a blasphemer. Human judgment is the life and core of Phariseeism. It directs the gaze ever outward to the defects of others and compares therewith the excellencies of the imagined self. But there is no tenderness possible, but rather hardness of heart, bitter injustice, selfishness, unruly willpower, a life of lying, hypocrisy, acting. How can such escape punishment when their own acts against others react upon themselves? But mercy rejoices against judgment. Mercy sets up one standard, not self, but God. The merciful man sees how far he is from the compassion of his heavenly Father and is humble. He seeks to bring others and himself to the right knowledge of God, and so is loving. It is in the very nature of things that the merciful shall obtain mercy. Having the human self for standard means gravitation hellward, until Phariseeism is purged by retribution. Through making God all in all, the heart is melted, man becomes merciful, and finds heaven on earth.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.